people in the administration? What do they represent? John Nichols, political writer for The Nation. His new book out today, Horsemen of the Trumpocalypse, a field guide to the most dangerous people in America. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, KBOO members. Join us at the KBOO annual meeting on Saturday, September 9th from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. The annual meeting is an opportunity for our members to come together, hear a report about the state of the station, and celebrate our community. This year, the meeting is dedicated to Michael Wells, who tragically passed on earlier this summer. As we celebrate the legacy of Michael, we will listen to some of the youth who contribute to our community and to what it means to follow their leadership. We hope to see you on Saturday, September 9th, from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. That's 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland.
Have you received your KBOO Silent Drive letter in the mail? Here is your chance to support your favorite community radio station and enter a chance to win some fabulous prizes. No letter? No worries. Go to KBOO.fm to find out more about what you could win when you donate to KBOO between now and September 14th. Here is a teaser. The grand prize is a week stay at El Dorado Resort and Casino with airfare in the biggest little city in the world. Yes, that's Reno, Nevada. The first prize is a night out on Burnside with a night at Jupiter Hotel, with dinner at Le Pigeon, drinks at Cedar Riot, and breakfast at Grendel's, so you can dive deep into the Burnside nightlife. And our second prize will allow you to stock up on medicinal and recreational treats at Jane PDX. Go to kboo.fm to donate. When we come together, we build our community's resilience, and there is no better time to invest in KBOO than now.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering locally roasted coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wild.
Yes.
Open country that I love.
Yes, Cole Porter. He wrote it. Our irony is not neglected. Hi, Abe.
Hey.
That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
Wow, that all makes so much sense.
Doesn't it?
It does.
I'm glad.
Cole Porter.
Cole Porter.
Yeah.
Well, actually, land, lots of land under the starry skies. Don't fence me in.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be talking about environmental stuff, aren't we?
We are.
Okay. I actually would like to start this off. Can I?
I suppose, yeah.
Well, you just got here. I've been here.
There's
I've been
microphone. Here. Microphone.
I've been anxiously
the
here.
The red light is on. Go
well,
ahead.
Well, first of all, I want to apologize to Francis because last week I mistakenly mistook the 14th Amendment for the 13th Amendment of the Constitution. She was absolutely right, and I want to give kudos to her.
Oh.
Why not?
Shame on you.
Yeah, well, I'll live through it.
I know.
It's all getting worse. I mean, it's really getting worse. You can look at this new latest Harvey? How do you name a hurricane Harvey? That's a rabbit.
Well, Joe.
Yes.
Hurricanes and tropical storms are named alphabetically.
Yes, and they alternate years
they alternate
to women
years,
to men, but, so be yes, fair.
Traditionally feminine and traditionally masculine names. Harvey starts with H. It's a traditionally masculine name, and there you have it.
Okay.
All right.
I'll accept that. It don't want to be prejudiced or any kind of wimpy. You know, Harvey, come on.
Well.
Name a famous Harvey.
Harvey Keitel.
That was good.
Yep.
That was fast. And he ain't no wimpy. Okay, so it is all getting worse. Now, there could be an argument about whether these hurricanes, which are more damaging than in the past, are in fact a part of global warming. But as we look at what's going on, it's kind of indisputable that things are going to hell in a climatic way. And now, I mean, I want to. This is the time of superstorms, of the destruction of the ice of the Arctic and Antarctic, and essentially the permafrost melting, putting out carbon dioxide in larger and larger amounts. And all you have to do is look outside, and you can see the marvelous red sun from the forest fires, and realize, well, you know, things seem to be out of sync. I think the term in the language of the Hopi was Kayanaskatsi. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this. And now, guess what?
What?
Oh, I knew you'd guess what. Remember how the masters of things have been creating super salmon?
Super salmon?
Super salmon. Yes, they've taken Atlantic salmon, which are inferior, actually, to the Pacific salmon.
You're a salmonist.
I'm a Salmonian. Anyway.
Saying one group of salmon is inferior to another?
I am.
Ah.
You haven't eaten enough salmon. You'd know.
Oh, no, you're saying Pacific salmon tastes better.
Well, they're also smarter. You take give them an IQ test, and they weigh ahead.
We digress. Tell us about
the
super salmon.
Yeah, really. We're being silly because it's crazy in time. All right. So about, I don't know, 2 years ago, they developed a way to genetically engineer Atlantic salmon to make them grow really fast, really big, and therefore give them a really good profit. Now, the question is it wise to eat a genetically altered salmon? We don't even need to go there because what has happened? In order to make money on salmon, some Atlantic salmon breeders have taken their little salmon smelts, mm-hmm. little salmon babies, and they put them in a big cage just off the coast of Washington State. Hmm. Now, one of the things we know historically and currently is that there is no better salmon than the salmon that is grown in Oregon, in Washington, and particularly in Alaska. These are great fish. They're very tasty. They're very strong. They're very healthy. So they thought, well, let's just put these salmon in a cage, what could be safer, mm-hmm. in the middle of the, not even in the middle, off the shore of Washington State.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't pay much attention to their cage.
So this is essentially a salmon farm.
It's a salmon farm.
Off the coast of Washington State.
With the genetically engineered salmons. Uh-huh. Big number.
And a big cage.
And the cage fell apart. And the salmon got out.
Uh-huh.
And the salmon, we presume, will probably be able to interbreed with the coho and all the others. And they're bigger.
Salmon-chanted evening. It will happen.
Oh, that's so good.
Thank you, Abe. You're
really on it today. The point of this is that there seems to be no way to stop the enormous ambitions of moneyed folk to make more and more money, even as they make more and more money. In other words, a thing that is bad is heaped on top of a thing that is bad to the point that in order to make it more profitable, they don't pay enough attention to the bad thing. So the salmon cage breaks up, the salmon get loose, we don't know what'll happen next, but the purity, the beauty, the holiness in terms of Native American people of the salmon is potentially compromised. And this is so, I think, so symbolic, so representational of what's going on with human messing up with things, particularly in the context of money making. That I really wanted to bring it up. But it's just a small example of what's going on. You probably have bigger examples.
Well, I have bigger examples, yes. And I would like to discuss all of this, not simply the examples, but the larger meta conversation about human-caused climate change with our listeners. So we should give them a phone number, shouldn't we?
I think so. 231.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. Here's what I mean by that larger meta conversation. You talked about all of this being framed in the context of money making, and I think that you were very astute to frame it that way. What is money making in the context of intelligent bipedal hominids, right? What is that?
Yeah.
It's that age-old drive to be the biggest monkey.
Hairless, right? Hairless monkey.
The biggest
nearly
monkey.
Hairless monkey.
Because we are, at the end of the day, still monkeys. And there are always monkeys who are going to be on top of the pile. And in order to get on top of the pile, these monkeys are willing, as you mentioned, to ignore unintended consequences, to pay less attention to the prevention of unintended consequences than they should, or even to do blatantly immoral and dangerous things in order to be the biggest monkey.
The richest monkey.
The richest monkey. And that's the same. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is the same thing today.
The biggest you're monkey, saying rich is equivalent to
biggest,
as yeah. in Donald Trump, perhaps the stupidest and most scary president ever, being rich, therefore a good guy.
Therefore a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He must be virtuous, otherwise he would not be so prosperous.
Right.
He deserves to be the alpha monkey, clearly.
Well, he thinks so.
He thinks so. So it's important to keep that in context. The other thing it's very important to keep in context is we're really talking about a story that's about 150 years old right now, and that is the story of industrial capitalism. How is industrial capitalism possible? The answer is through energy. And we live right now at the tail end of an era, an unprecedented era of cheap, easily obtainable energy.
Like hydroelectric, like coal, like oil?
Well, oil primarily, fossil fuels primarily. Hydroelectric energy is arguably cleaner in terms of emissions, although it has a lot of unintended consequences that are pretty serious.
Right.
But by and large, the industrial era has been powered by the combustion of fossilized hydrocarbons.
Well, I would add one thing to that.
Okay.
The labor of human beings.
Yes, the labor of human beings.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Certainly. That's part of a much longer story.
Really?
A very similar story, as it turns out,
right.
But a very much longer one. Cheap, easily obtainable energy is what has powered industrial civilization. We are running out of that. The consequences of that are many. They are pretty easy to see. But one consequence that nobody ever foresaw was that the, believe it or not, the continued combustion of millions and millions of tons of fossilized hydrocarbons is going to warm the planet drastically and permanently change climate patterns around the globe.
Yeah, but we'll have to spend less on clothing. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm being silly.
Well, maybe you'll spend less on clothing, or maybe there won't be clothing for you to purchase because there's no more energy to produce it in the mass quantities that make it affordable to you and to the billions of people who
live
on
this planet.
Or you'll
have to walk around in Mylar.
Something like that. But that is the context here. We've got people trying to be the biggest monkey, as they have always done and probably always will do. And we are running out of cheaply obtainable fossilized hydrocarbons to burn. This is a deadly, deadly combination. And just, if you don't believe me, just ask the residents of Houston right now.
Really? And there's another aspect to this. In order to solve this problem, and in order to make us the top dog in the great war ahead. In the great war ahead. We have produced enormous amounts of plutonium. In fact, enough plutonium to actually make, I think, 5,000 thermonuclear devices. And there's no place to store this plutonium. We have nowhere to take it. The scientists for a while thought, oh, we could shoot it into the sun. God knows what that would do. But then they realized, oh, one out of some small number of rockets actually fails. So if you shoot a rocket to the sun and it fails, and all that plutonium gets spread around the world, you've got hypercancer.
Hypercancer, yes.
So suddenly, that solution doesn't exist. Then there was the idea of putting it in the salt mines underneath Nevada. But the good senator from Nevada rightly said, hey, we don't want this stuff. And the gambling community said, hey, we don't want this stuff. And suddenly that availability went away. Right now, in casks, at what used to be the Trojan Nuclear Power Plant, a great economic disaster for which we're all paying, right now there is a lot of spent nuclear fuel just sitting in water in casks waiting for the big one. I just thought I'd cheer everyone up.
That's fun.
Right.
So we have a pretty broad-ranging conversation today. In order to sort of set the table for this, I want to talk a little bit more about what's happening right now in Texas with Hurricane Harvey.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah.
Or doing, sad, not good.
Right. In doing some research for this, I came across an article in the Houston Chronicle from about 1 year ago.
Uh-huh.
The Chronicle, or the article in the Chronicle, was about a speech given in Houston last year by former Vice President Al Gore, the man from whom the presidency was stolen.
Right.
In the year 2000. And as most people who listen to the show probably know, an early and very vocal advocate about climate change. Here's what Al Gore said last year in Texas, and I'm reading now from the Houston Chronicle article. Warmer air can hold more water vapor and unleash it in the form of what Gore called, quote, rain bombs. He lamented the latest flooding in Louisiana that's taken at least 10 lives and flooded tens of thousands of homes. He noted, this is Gore, the article is talking about, that Texas has suffered more multi-billion dollar climate disasters in the past 35 years than any other state. Houston was hit by five major floods from May of 2015 through this May, that's May of last year. This is in the course of 1 year now. Two 100-year floods and one 1,000-year flood. In May 2015, Gore added, Texas had its rainiest month ever at, quote, almost Noah-like, unquote, proportions.
Noah.
Quote, we have built a civilization for conditions that we are now in the process of rapidly changing, and the consequences are extreme, Gore said. These statistics that say once in 1,000 years or once in 500 years are not accurate anymore. Now, this really encapsulates, I think, what we're talking about. The current models, the predictability of global climate is no longer there. We can no longer assume statistically that what has statistically been true will continue to be true. And if Gore is looking remarkably prescient here when he talks about rain bombs, because we're talking about over the last several days in the Gulf Coast region of Texas, we're talking about rain measurements in the feet.
Right.
Feet.
And it's not over yet. It's still
not
going
over
on.
Yet. No. And you know, hurricanes have always happened, yes, to those climate deniers who may be out there. But there's no denying that the severity of hurricane activity has increased in recent years. This is because there's a direct correlation between rising surface ocean temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico and the ferocity of the resulting hurricanes. There's no question about this. And there is a cosmic irony that the city of Houston, the self-styled energy capital of the world, is now being inundated by yet another hurricane.
Yes, the place that poisons everybody who lives there.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about today. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can drop us a line. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/AbeandJoe, or you can tweet at HonestAbe72. Let's go to the phones. Chris, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Can you guys hear me all right?
Indeed. Yeah. What's on your mind?
Excellent. Yeah, so, well, the first thing that I thought about this morning was the Showtime series, Years of Living Dangerously.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode, I think maybe even the first couple of episodes are available for free online. And Don Cheadle goes into Texas and talks to folks about, at the time when the film was being made, it was actually they were in a drought. They were in a historic drought in Texas. Mm-hmm. And they interviewed one of the folks that they focused on was this woman who is a Christian but also a climate scientist. And how she was, you know, working really hard to try to convince folks at church on Sunday that the two were not mutually exclusive, that you could believe in Jesus and still see climate change as a serious threat.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, right? It's sad that, you know, she's like the one person. But so I'm thinking about that, though, and how when Don Cheadle was talking to these folks, they were attributing this record drought to, well, yeah, it just happens sometimes, you know. And now here we are just a few years later, and boom, you know, the rain bomb, as Al Gore refers to it, right? So, you know, I'm just seeing this whole thing happen, and it's just mind-blowing that we're in this place. And I really hope that the people of Texas are okay, that they're safe. But I really hope that in some way that this tragedy opens more people's eyes to the fact that what we human beings are doing on the planet is what is making things worse for ourselves and for other people. And yeah, so those are my thoughts this morning. And I really hope we can rally folks together and shake ourselves out of this. I also just finished Hochschild's book, Strangers in Their Own Land, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you're looking at these ultra conservatives in the Louisiana bayous who are going to work for these petrochemical companies, and at the same time that they're working for these petrochemical companies, they're seeing those companies pollute and destroy the very environment and the wildlife that they've grown up appreciating, and how they square those two things and how they rationalize those two things. And I feel like there's something in there, at least for me, to like, we've got to reach out to folks who are different from us, who think differently politically, ideologically, and we've got to use these kinds of events to show people that we need each other. We got to get together, and we can't wait anymore.
Well, I think you made some very good points. I want to thank you for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Chris is a great caller. Always is.
Yeah. He's a smarty pants.
He's a smarty pants. Yeah. I'm glad he made that. You know, I'm not a religious guy, but it's consistently puzzled me why so many people who identify as Christian also also are climate change deniers. Almost as if their affiliation is not rational at all, but rather tribal, as we've discussed on this show many times. So I'm glad to hear that there are Christians out there who see as part of their job stewardship of the global environment. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, it's right in the Bible.
It is right in the Bible. Well, it's a lot of contradictory stuff in there, too.
Yeah.
But that's a discussion for another time. I hope that more Christians will take up that baton. I think that's a very positive development.
Well, you know, now remember, I don't want to digress into a discussion of Christianity, but remember that there's Christians and then there's Christians, and fundamentalist Christianity, which is a uniquely American phenomenon, really begins. You could look at it as beginning with the split in the Baptist Church between the Northern and Southern Baptists, which, by the way, had to do with the question of whether or not black people would have a different heaven than white people, and whether or not black people could worship at the same church as white people.
Well, of course there's a separate heaven. Come on.
Well, it's like the Mormons. They have lots of heavens.
It's funny, though, that you just said you didn't want to get sidetracked into it.
Well, I'm sorry. Don't call about that.
You really did.
Do not call about religion. Okay.
And the other thing I want to mention in the context of this discussion, I don't know if you've seen the images from Houston, but it's devastating what's happening there.
By the way, folks.
No, hang on. All right, go.
Well, just really quickly, if you have a little spare change, any amount of money, Red Cross or other service agencies could really use it right now for the people of Houston.
Okay, yes.
Sorry.
Once again, we are seeing a climactic incident, a disaster, falling upon a major American city. And once again, ad nauseum, this is going to fall hardest on the backs of poor folks and people of color. Once again. And, you know, we keep saying this so often, it's become a familiar refrain. And I suppose in a way that's a good thing. But let's not forget that every time something like this happens, every time the monkeys at the top try to get even bigger, more poor folks, more communities of color get flooded out of their communities. It's a fact. And it's long past time we did something about it.
What?
I don't know.
That's so good.
That's why we have our callers. Who's next? Let's go to the phones. Who do we have? All right. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, what's happening, Michael?
Well, this thing about how Harvey is evidence that the climate is changing, you can't validate a theory by just counting every time a prediction a theory makes is correct without also noticing the times when that theory made predictions that haven't been correct. Like, for instance, this thing of Al Gore's about how warm water is going to cause more bigger storms and rain bombs and all this stuff. That prediction was made a number of years ago, and what promptly happened was that the number of hurricanes per year dropped, which is not what the theory predicted.
Let me ask you a question, Michael. Are you going on the record in opposition to human-caused climate change? Do you believe it or don't you?
I am going on the record as we don't really know enough to say for sure how much of a change it's causing. Because there's this concept of climate sensitivity, which is for X amount of adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, you get Y amount of temperature increase. One knows what that number is.
97% of climate scientists and a proportional number of climate studies have concluded that human beings are behind the recent rise in global temperature.
Do you know where that number 97% came from? I do. Do you?
Why don't you tell us?
This very careless study was done where they gave people who were not climate scientists abstracts of a whole bunch of articles and asked those people to score those abstracts on whether or not they supported or didn't support the assertion of climate change.
Okay, Michael, I enjoy sparring with you, and I think you're a very interesting guy and fairly bright. But here's the deal.
I'm flattered.
Well, don't be flattered, because comes next the bomb. I really believe the bomb. I really, really think that there is so much evidence at this point of climate change that an argument about whether or not it's human caused or not is irrelevant, because it's a human contributed phenomenon. Don't have to have causation here. You just have to have contribution. And the thing that human beings, who are conscious animals, presumably, can do is to reduce the damage happening, whether it's natural or unnatural. And that makes sense. And the way you do that is to change the way we deal with energy issues. There's no question about that. Surely you agree to that.
Well, kind of.
There's no kind of.
But here's the other side of it. If this is really such a big effing emergency, like you guys are saying it is, why aren't we acting like it? Why aren't, for instance, there's this thing of if you fertilize the ocean with soluble iron, then this is an idea that's been around since the early 90s. If you put a lot of soluble iron in the ocean, it's like fertilizer for plankton. The thing that limits their growth is the amount of iron in the water. So you put a lot of iron in the water, the ocean turns green. These guys build their skeletons out of calcium carbonate, which means they're pulling CO2 out of the ocean to make their skeletons. When they die, their skeletons fall to the ocean floor and end up being limestone. So what you've got is this biological, scalable, really cheap way of dumping as much CO2 out of the atmosphere as you want to. Now, so the Haida Indians decided to try this out, and it also has the side effect of being very nourishing for fish because they eat plankton. So the Haida Indians decide to try this up in the Queen Charlotte Islands, and the entire environmental community comes down on them like a ton of bricks for committing this crime against God knows what. You know, if this is such an emergency, why aren't we seriously pursuing something like that instead of suing us like, you know, wind power and solar power, which,
let me answer your question.
For base load.
Frankly, I think your line of reasoning right now is a bit of a red herring, and here's why. I don't know a lot about the dumping of iron into the ocean. I presume it's in the form of iron shavings or powdered iron or something.
It's iron sulfate. It's something chloride.
Be that as it may. I don't know a lot about that theory, but for the sake of argument, let's go with you and let's say it's true. Let's say it's a cheap, effective way of helping to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Fine. But your question is, why don't we do something about it? Why aren't we acting like it's more important? I would respond that the vast majority of thinking people in the world are concerned about it, do want to do something about it. The reason that we haven't acted as decisively as we need to can be traced directly to the influence that's wielded over the machinery of government, both here in the United States and, although to a lesser extent, abroad, by wealthy interests connected to fossil fuel industries, people who are trying to get bigger, who profit from the continued extraction and combustion of fossilized hydrocarbons. That is why. Let me finish. So I think it's a little disingenuous on your part, Michael, to suggest that this is not a big deal, or to suggest that the preponderance of thinking people in the world don't want to do something about it.
Well, you know, the people who came down like a ton of bricks on the Haida Indians were not the people you just described. It was the environmentalists.
Well, if you're talking about you're confusing the ironies and the activities of various interest groups with the larger issue, the more profound issue, which I think is quite clear. We have reached the point where it is obvious that burning fossil fuels, whatever else is going on, is not helping climate change be better. Not redressing things. Okay. You can't argue against that.
Well, okay. What you're saying is we have sped up the output side of the CO2 cycle so much that it's out of balance, right?
Yes.
Isn't that a way of saying what you just said?
Yes.
Well, I don't believe in balance, but yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Okay, yes. Well, this iron thing is a way of speeding up the uptake set part of the carbon cycle and balancing it out again.
So you're saying, why are people stupid? Is that what you're really asking, or is that your point? If that's really a solution, and I don't know anything about it, so I can't answer that. If that's really a solution, and it's not being done on any scale that matters, all we can say is, using Abe's monkey analogy, that the monkey is unwilling to do the work, and the reason why it's unwilling to do the work is there's no profit immediately in it. That's the larger point.
The people who came down on the Haida Indians were not the capitalists, were not the oil companies, were not all these standard villains that you guys pursue. It was the environmentalists and the scientific community. They're the ones that came down on the Haida Indians.
Now, if you're making the claim that among the environmental environmental left, there happens to be an irrational reactionary element, I will concede that point. But that doesn't do anything to refute the larger claim that human activity, particularly the long-term, large-scale combustion of fossilized hydrocarbons, is changing, as you put it so eloquently, the balance of the carbon cycle on planet Earth. That is a fact. That is unassailable scientifically at this point in time, and has been for some time. So if you're going to refute that, Michael, don't pull up a handful of irrational people on the environmental left. That is not an effective refutation of the argument.
Well, and there's another. Michael, listen. There's another really important point here that I'm going to use because I think you can relate to this one. During the course of the Cold War, when it seemed very likely, in fact, terrifyingly probable, that the Soviet Union and the United States would go to war using thermonuclear devices, which may yet become a problem, weirdly, there was a decision made by essentially what I will call the military-industrial complex to produce a lot of throw weight of plutonium. And it did. And now it made plutonium more than could ever be used. There was a whole bunch of theoretical work that showed that there would be a terrible darkening of the skies from the debris of these wars. Now we're pretty clear that a thermonuclear war would really alter the world in horrible ways, all kinds of horrible ways. Now we're looking at, in the United States alone, somewhere in around 5,000 thermonuclear weapons worth of plutonium that we have no way of getting rid of, and that has a half-life such that there will be no civilization such as ours by the time it's half spent. Now, this is real. This is real, and it really relates to the military-industrial complex and to the absurdities that we see in our political and social systems. And it's not, let me be clear here, it's not unique to the United States, but it's certainly especially compelling in the United States. That's where we're going from, okay?
Well, I don't see exactly the relationship between that and the climate thing.
The relationship is the irrationality of capitalism in the face of very probable, you say not certain, but very probable damage being done by the continued insistence on using one particular delivery system for power when there are other perfectly reasonable available alternatives.
Well, I mean,
okay, well, another time.
We're going to have to let you go. I'm going to send you off with this, Michael. It appears to me you're a smart guy. You're a scientist. And I'm surprised.
Is he a scientist?
He's got a PhD in computer science.
That's not a science.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
No, you're just being a bigot now.
Yeah.
it's kind of funny, actually, to hear a scientist refute something as established as human caused climate change by saying, look, there's a handful of loony environmental lefties out there.
About which I know nothing.
Right. And that's just, I think you could do better than that, Michael. If you truly don't believe in this thing, then, try and refute it. Don't just tell me there's some silly, irrational reactionaries in the environmental
left. There's even a better argument than that. Let us say that the notion of human caused global warming is absolutely nothing. It's wrong. Nevertheless, warming is taking place. And at the same time, we know that we can decrease this warming by some number, we don't know the exact number, simply by changing the way in which we create electricity.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? We have the money, we have the power, as it were, and we ought to be doing that. The resistance to it comes from companies, corporations, and their stockholders who don't want to invest in what could be a solution because it would not produce the kind of profit that they demand.
So we really don't have the power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 8. Oh, that's our show. Never mind. At 9.
Well, we're together today.
At 8, two blowhards. At 9, Alternative Radio, the Baffler magazine editor Thomas Frank looks at how this became the country that voted for Trump. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on stage and studio host Susanna Mars visits with the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art. And at 11:30, on Art Focus, Joseph Galivan brings you part one of his special on the 2017 Time-Based Art Festival. Super cool festival. I don't know if you've ever taken it in, but it's very, very cool. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show at KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. You can also drop us a line at our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. John writes in to say, the reality of global climate change has been foreseen for many more decades than brought to the public consciousness. For example, a note in the New York Times, August 12th, 1912. This is really cool. You want to hear this?
Okay, yeah.
This is August 12th, 1912 in the New York Times. The headline, coal consumption affecting climate. The furnaces of the world are now burning about 2 billion tons of coal a year. When this is burned, uniting with oxygen, it adds about 7 billion tons of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere yearly. This tends to make the air a more effective blanket for the earth and to raise its temperature. The effect may be considerable in a few centuries. Nice job, New York Times.
In 1912?
Very, very prescient.
Wow.
Let's go to the phones. Barth, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Sorry I missed the beginning of your show. It's always so entertaining. The people, the news talking head from Texas on the first day of the storm and disaster, they were talking to newsrooms in newspapers. They called in to newspapers down there, apparently because they couldn't get anybody at the local television stations on the radio or on the air. But the reporter speaking about this said that the person that's the head of the Flood Control Commission for one of the major cities was given a report about flooding and the increasing and serious flooding and the reasons for the serious flooding, which include a lot of development, which is paving over wetlands and
areas. That's true, and that's important.
And his comment was basically, oh, we can science our way out of this. We can pave our way out of this by making channels and spillways and containment things versus working with the environment at all. So that's the kind of deniability that
it's hubris. It's fundamentally hubris. But I want to point out an oddity of this very event today, of the terrible Harvey. The city and county, the area of Houston, is having to release water from its dams to increase the flooding short term, because the amount of water in there is so great that they reasonably, apparently, based on engineering studies, believe that the dams would fail if they didn't release the water. So in other words, the concept of having a system that could contain this water is a total failure in the face of an enormous tragedy of this kind. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, I think that's very important. You know, scale is the thing that people seem to have a difficult time grasping. I also enjoy Michael calling in, and it's good to have a foil and a counterpoint. But as you have said more cogently today than in some points in the past, if we realize that this is a problem, however the problem is generated, if we don't do what we can do to mitigate it, and relieve the suffering that tends to happen primarily on the lower economic rungs.
Well, and the lower land, like Bangladesh, I mean, is another example of this.
Agreed. Yeah, and much of India is currently underwater. It's not pretty. I'll let you go. Talk to somebody else. My good luck for you for today. Good day.
Thanks a lot,
sir. Who's next? Juan. Good morning.
Hey guys.
Hey.
So I spent about a month in Montana this summer.
Wow, that sounds nice.
And I don't know if you've seen what's going on in Missoula, but I was driving down I-90, headed to Missoula, looked over at the car to my right, and the lady was wearing a respirator on her face.
Ah.
That's what, you know, I mean, for anybody to say, hey, it's not a big deal, why aren't we acting like it's important? It's because they're not paying attention. And the other part of it is, have you heard anybody say, yeah, these superstorms, these thousand-year events that we're now getting every year, have you heard that on the mainstream news? And are you hearing them say climate change or global warming? You're not.
Well, I want to agree with you in this respect. I notice an absence of discussion of climate change as a rational possibility and a rational problem generally in the media. And, of course, I look to who owns the media and where their investments are. But thank you. Go ahead.
And then the other thing is we have it going on in our state. I don't know, like, if you've been outside this morning, it's very hazy. I'm thinking that's smoke from Sisters.
But it was pretty, the red sun, so beautiful.
Yeah, well, we're gonna really enjoy the atmospherics on our way out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Take it easy, guys.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Okay, it's your turn. Go for it.
This is a hard, on the one level, it's an easy topic to talk about because, you know, it's so clear that this is what's happening. It's
right.
So clear that burning...
But then there's the Michaels of the world. Sorry, go ahead.
Right. Well, it's so clear that burning stuff to power industrialized society is ruining the planet. That's obvious. It's clear. It's really hard not to see it. You have to work hard not to see it. But at the same time, the scale of the problem is so daunting. And we all, we all decry... on the left, you know, the wastefulness of capitalism, it's avarice, it's a disdain for those low down on the political, social, economic ladders, its ravenous appetite for natural resources. We decry all of these things, but we all enjoy the fruits of industrial civilization, do we not? We're sitting talking on the radio, for God's sake. If you can hear my voice right now, you are a beneficiary of the Industrial Revolution. We have lengthened lifespans. We have combated diseases. We have done all sorts of amazing things since the dawn of the industrial age. But we're killing ourselves at the same time. This is a huge problem. It's really hard to get your brain around how exactly we fix all of this, how we summon the political will, how we pay for it all. But the fact is we've run out of time. We can't be daunted anymore by how big this problem is. We can't simply stick our heads back in the sand and conduct business as usual. Any of you who have children know that is irresponsible parenting, at the very least. We have to do it, and we have to figure it out soon.
And I agree with you, but I think that part of the problem is that we have abandoned any kind of an analysis of the functions of capitalism and the dysfunctions of capitalism.
I disagree with that.
I know you do.
I think the last presidential campaign and the prominence of Bernie Sanders' campaign in particular...
Yeah.
Showed that there's plenty of room right now
for a pretty vigorous
critique of capitalism.
You're right.
And it's
I back
yes,
off. You're
and
right.
its consequences, both intended and unintended.
On the other hand, what happened when the so-called Liberal Party, the Democratic Party, realized that Bernie had an enormous popular following? Despite the fact they endangered, and to a large extent I think destroyed, their ability to have a presidency, they went after him.
Yeah. Capitalist monkeys are still in charge.
Yep.
Yep. Let's go to the phones. Richard, good morning.
Good morning. I had intended to give more detail, but I think I'm just going to reduce my comment to I don't know how you guys feel, but I am sick and tired of your pseudo-intellectual caller, Michael.
Hmm. Oh, no, we
capture your time on a regular basis.
Well, here's...
He goes on and on and on.
Okay, maybe we should devote...
strength from everybody else.
Okay, maybe we should devote less time to Michael, but here's the thing. I come out of a tradition of talk radio which is not by itself progressive. I like to hear as many different voices and many different ideas as possible. We only have an hour. Were it the world I would fantasize, it would be very different. But, oh, I lost him. But the fact of the matter is that I miss the repartee with people with whom I disagree. And unfortunately, because this is KBOO, Michael's what we got. Or fortunately, he's not a foolish man. Fortunately,
no,
he's
all.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think to describe him as a pseudo-intellectual is not accurate. He's a smart guy.
No,
an educated guy.
He has his points. He's a little silly, but you know.
Yeah, but the larger point, this is a call-in talk radio program. If you want to hear less of Michael, pick up the phone and call yourself.
Yeah, crowd him out.
Yeah. Who's next?
Steve,
good morning.
Hey,
good morning,
Steve.
What's on your mind?
No, Steve.
All right. Well, we'll come back to Steve if we're able.
Yeah. Who we got? Oh.
All right. Keep trying, Steve.
Yeah. We cleared the wire there. Oh, my God.
All right, Joe. So how do we get ourselves out of this mess? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm a dark-minded person. I think there are ways out. I think, for example, there could be some increased consciousness about the issues and their authenticity. I think there could be a social democratic, I won't call it revolution, but harsh evolution toward a rational order of things in the United States. But I feel absolutely refuted by the fact that much of the working class, much of the society in general, is poorly educated. Not that we don't have schools, but poorly educated and unaware of the larger issues, and that the media, which is a dominant force in our society, does not choose to make that all clear. And in the face of that, we also have a totally corrupt political system. I have to say that now.
But her emails, Joe.
What?
But Hillary's emails.
But Hillary's emails, a totally corrupt political system. And we have the result of this is we have, for the first time in, I believe, our whole history, we have an insane, megalomaniacal, maniacal, stupid, egotistical, crazy man.
Let us know where you stand.
Yeah.
Don't beat
crazy
around the bush.
Crazy man in charge of the presidency of the United States and an incredibly weak and chicken, I can't use the last word of that word, government in the form of a Congress that is afraid of doing anything brave or careful. And I do have the Catholic sin of despair. I don't know. It's so messed up and so weird and so incredibly, incredibly crazy. I actually thought for a while, well, Trump will, you know, he'll do what he can and the Congress will block him. And then I thought, oh, no, they're not going to block him, but he's going to be so crazy and it's going to be so obvious that his deal with the Russians and it'll all collapse. And then he'll go to jail or at least he'll pardon himself or whatever. And the end, that'll be the end of that. But then I thought, oh, but then there's Pence and then there's Ryan. And I started looking at these absolutely, and I'm going to say this because it's really true, insane, opportunistic, neo-capitalist crazies in charge of the Republican Party. And they are not patriots. They are partyists. They're more interested in retaining their power than in the welfare of the United States.
The monkeys.
Yeah. These bad monkeys.
Yep.
So I'm looking at the bad monkeys, and then I look at the Democrats, and they are in disarray. They have abandoned what was learned by the process of the work of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and others to look at the Democratic Party as a route to social democracy, not communism, not socialism, but a system that takes care of the poor, that feeds everyone equally, and that creates opportunity for people who are creative and hardworking. This is a system that would work in the United States, but it's not happening exactly. Instead, we are mainly catering to our peculiar conveniences, our Ubers and our onliners and so on, which is why, to a great extent, I am very much of a Luddite.
That's not the only reason that you're very much of a Luddite.
Well,
but we won't talk about that right now.
I guess not.
I think there's reason to believe that we can turn this around. And I say that not just out of a you know, sort of blind optimism, but because there's...
Oh, that's just because you have young children.
Evidence. Well, it's largely because, yes, I do have young children. And I want to bequeath to them an earth that's in good shape, that is sustainable, that will allow them to prosper and their progeny to prosper and everyone... Well, okay. But that's all for another time. Here's why I think we can do something about this. Because... the price of renewable energy is getting cheaper all the time.
True.
Why? Because enough public and private investment were managed to be garnered over the last couple of decades to start putting these technologies onto a scale where their unit costs are lowered. And this is one of the great truths of the industrial age. The more something you're able to make, the less it costs to make each one. Right, that's both a blessing and a curse, as we can see around us every day.
Right.
But when it comes to making wind turbines and solar panels, it's a blessing. There were a couple of days earlier this year where in Germany, they managed to meet their entire nation's electricity demand entirely from renewables. They're not able to do it every day. They're not able to do it all the time. But they've made enough progress so that this is something that's within reach. And during the Obama administration, something he accomplished, I think a major accomplishment, one of his policies that didn't get a lot of run in the press, is that investment in green energy infrastructure increased dramatically under his administration and has lowered the cost of such technologies in this country as well. As a listener notes on our Facebook page, in Kenya right now, there are 4-year jail terms for selling or using plastic bags. So we're making these technologies more and more affordable that can help wean us from burning fossilized hydrocarbons. And we're seeing legislation, even in developing countries, that is exacting stiff penalties for people who do more of the same. So we're seeing the shift in consciousness begin to happen. This is not out of reach. What we really need to do here in the United States, and I think more here than anywhere else in the world, is that we need to break the power of the fossil fuel monkeys. And say to them and the world that, yes, if we need, if somebody's got to be the biggest monkey, let it be a green energy monkey and not an oil monkey.
Well, I agree with you, but I note that the government of the United States right now is going to build, not having enough plutonium, clearly, is going to build a whole bunch of new thermonuclear devices to keep up with what?
Wrong monkeys, Joe. Got the wrong monkeys. Who's next? John, good morning.
Hi, good morning. There is something that all of us can do, which is I would suggest to all of us, open up your wallet, look at your credit cards and your ATM cards. Do you have a major bank card? Get rid of it.
Hmm.
Get a local.
I do.
Get a credit union. And I say this from the perspective of someone who spent the last 2 years working at one of the high-end, like, organic grocery stores and watching people come through mouthing platitudes about, you know, PC correctness and then pay with their purchase with a major bank card.
Ah, the irony.
Ah, the irony. You know, the irony is also, you know, Joe, I share with you the sin of despair. Watching that over and over again, it just was very, very difficult. So that's definitely something that we can do, and somebody might argue that that's not a direct contributor to global warming, but it is intimately connected with the mechanisms that use the financial support for that. Get a credit union. Open up your own wallet. Look yourself in the mirror. Look at your cards in your wallet. And if you want to, before you choose to want to condemn somebody else, see yourself and act upon what you see.
I totally agree with you.
Okay. I want to be clear about this. I am of multiple minds on this whole problem, on the whole set of problems.
Thank you for the call, John.
I do believe that it is possible for us, we humans, and I won't even call us monkeys because we're kind of past that. I believe you and I don't agree about this, but I think it's possible for us to come to our senses. It's still possible. I'll keep thinking it's possible until the water goes up beyond my nose.
I'm glad you don't live in South Texas, because the water.
Well, I've always been glad I didn't live in South Texas. I got some South Texas stories I can share with you, but I won't do that tonight.
John is absolutely right, and I would go farther to say the extent to which you can localize your entire life, the better. If you can eat things that are grown locally, if you can purchase products that are manufactured locally, that resonates and rebounds in a whole bunch of ways far beyond simply concern for the environment. It's better for local workers. It's better for local wages. It's better for local small business owners. It's just a good idea.
And yet Whole Foods, a Texas company, has merged.
Amazon.
I mean, Amazon.
Yeah. Let's see. Paul is next. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Great show as always.
Thank you.
Hey, I totally agree with your previous caller. Credit unions, definitely the way to go. The reason I'm calling this morning is, you know, the huge Houston fiasco that's going on right now, again, climate change. And I used to work for a big aerospace company. It starts, the name starts with a B. I won't say the name because I'll probably get sued.
Are they the ones who quit Seattle?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So I was on a committee with them on how to improve basic business practices. And there were three major things. They needed to recruit younger people and get energized about their business program. They needed to down, of course, they're always trying to cut costs. So I said, look, you're up on a hill. You've got the biggest freestanding building in the nation. Why not put solar panels all across your factory roof, number one? Number two, put up windmills because you're right on a bluff, right over, you know, Whidbey Island. Mm-hmm. And number three, put in bike paths and make it more appealing to people who like a healthy lifestyle. I used to ride my bike every day of work, and you know, and a lot of us did, and we couldn't understand why they couldn't improve the infrastructure with as much money as they make polluting the air with the airplanes. Why not be more ecocentric and offset all those carbon things with all your technology used for space and aerospace to make the environment where you live better? And so those are my comments. I wish all the well. I hope some people down in Houston have those Red Cross wind-up radios so they can hear you guys. But anyways, I really appreciate your show, and I'll take the rest.
Thank you very much. I wanted, since this has been mentioned, I really think we need to understand, that we, among the capitalist nations, and I include China among them, we are the least progressive. And it's a very interesting phenomenon. Because China is an up-and-comer, it's by no means a democracy, but because it's an up-and-comer, it is definitely turning its energy interests toward the renewables because it can see the long-term advantage for China. They were a coal-based system, and they can smell it, see it, feel it in their healthcare and so on. They know the advantages of it. I think one of the examples that is really important is in the 1950s, a decision was made by the automakers, the tire makers, and the oil industry to build highways rather than high-speed trains. This was within the capabilities of that time. In Europe, in Asia, in Africa even, high-speed rail is a wonderful solution to the transport of both goods and people. We don't do that. We are not going to do that under any administration I've seen so far. If we did that, the energy savings would be enormous. Airplanes are a very dirty producer of carbon hydrocarbons, and they don't need, we don't need them. And there are, if you've ridden in a plane lately, it's really uncomfortable. Trains are fun. Trains are nice. Trains are fast. Trains are cheaper and less environmentally destructive. The way they function, the way they work, if they're built right, is essentially they're drawing electricity, which can be, of course, created by solar energy and wind energy. And then you got a fast, high-speed system that can take you from the Canadian border to the Mexican border in a very, very fast time and with much less hassle and much greater comfort. And there's no reason not to do it, but except that the investment and the interests of capitalism as it is have become functionally reactive rather than progressive.
Wrong monkeys. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's get one more in here before the end. Moon.
Real quick.
Moon, you're next.
Hello?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, I'm going for it here. I think I came up with our Harvey. Harvey Wallbanger.
Harvey Wallbanger. Okay.
All right. Well, I think that might be appropriate.
Oh, you mean we should all sit down and have a drink?
I don't know how I'm being, but I'm schizophrenic, and so am I. And Howard bails me out every once in a while. We're never alone. He came up with this one. Sometimes he gets me in trouble. And actually, I don't know Howard's gender. And sometimes Howard bails me out. So
okay, man.
All right. All right.
Well,
thank
you. Thanks for the call.
I'm not sure what that was about.
I don't know. Maybe that's a good place to leave it for today.
Well, okay. And yeah. We'll be back next week.
Yeah. I do want to encourage people, as we mentioned earlier, if you can, open up your wallet, pull out a little money and help out the people suffering in South Texas and Louisiana right now. The Red Cross is a good place to start. There's lots of other great organizations.
Lots of great organizations. Make sure it's a place that really gives the money to the people, though.
I also encourage you to visit 350.org. That is the organization, a website founded by the great Bill McKibben, a guest on this show from time to time. Wonderfully informative on the subject of climate change, including lots of suggestions on how you can reduce your personal carbon emissions. So, thank you everybody for your contributions today.
And remember, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial, the best in music as well as public affairs. Disorder from sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 7th Annual Arab Festival, Saturday, September 2nd at Oaks Amusement Park in Portland. The 7th Annual Arab Festival will feature delicious, authentic cuisine, music, dance, poetry, fun activities for all ages, and much, much more. Admission is free. Again, that's the 7th Annual Arab Festival, Saturday, September 2nd from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Oaks Amusement Park, 7805 Southeast Oaks Parkway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To imagine that the real partisan divide in this country is between a party of righteousness and a party of sin, I think that's a mistake. Or that we're in some kind of titanic battle between enlightenment and ignorance. I don't think that's what it is. But I think that...